Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, some trade deficit numbers. Uh-oh, trouble. Evidently, our trade deficit in August up to $73.3 billion. That's a 1.4% increase above July of 70.3. And we're back on track. Record deficits. Yay! Evidently, the pandemic is changing, and we're our appetite for foreign-made goods, well, rising. And this, again, brings me back to what Joe Biden was talking about today. We're losing our competitive advantage, we're losing our edge, and we've got to reshore manufacturing. We've got to build the things of the future that we need, and we need to do it. Well, we need to do it right here. And here to share some thoughts on maybe how we get to do some of that, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, to come share some thoughts on, well, what the president had to say today and what the trade advisor had to say on Monday. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Ricky, it is good to be with you, even though there was bad news about the trade deficit, of course.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one of those moments where you go, Houston, we got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, here's what I struggle with is that, you know, the lesson of the pandemic was that being overly reliant on imports is a stupid strategy from a public health perspective, from a national security perspective, from an economic perspective. And there were all these earnest efforts, you know, from political figures and from the business community say, we're going to get this right. We're never going to, you know, be put in this situation again. Yet here we are 18 months later, and the situation is that the trade deficit is growing. And just in case your listeners don't know what that is, that's the difference between the volume of exports that we're sending out of the United States to other countries and the volume of imports that we're taking in from other countries, mostly China. And we've been running trade deficits for a very long time, but there can be a strategy to bring that down. It starts with reshoring some of that manufacturing, what Joe Biden has been talking about. And it also has to do with a trade policy that places a price on things that currently priced, like the pollution that occurs in these overseas factories when they're making all this cheap disposable stuff that people love to buy here. You know, we don't have to pay any of the direct cost for the pollution that's being created. We will down the road, Rick, but that's not reflected in the price of the good. It should be. Or if they're made with exploited labor or under other sorts of conditions. And so what does this mean at the end of the day? Because people do like to get cheap stuff. It's like, you know, from a consumer perspective, just take a minute to think about your purchase and why not buy something more durable that's going to last for 10 years, even if it's going to cost you 10% more. Yep. When you're purchasing it. And from a societal perspective, think about the cost when we lose these factory jobs. I am sure there is not a person out there who hasn't lived in a community or known someone who has lost their job in manufacturing, who has seen what happens to a community. It is hard for that community to recover. You know, and it may get jobs back, it may bring the unemployment rate down, but those are not going to be well-paying, family-supporting jobs, and it spirals that community or the neighborhood into poverty or near-poverty conditions for a lot of folks, and it takes a generation or two to recover from that. And so this stuff is easy to lose. It's hard to get back. We can get it back. We've seen great examples recently where companies have said, hey, we're going to build a battery factory, or like Ford, you know, create 10,000 jobs. But we got to do more of that. We have to make it intentional. And hopefully that's yet another signal that we need to change the way that we're doing things.
No, I'm right there with you. But you, when you said, you know, people like cheap goods, I'm going, well, I don't. I want good goods. You know, I want something that's going to last. Cheap is relative. If I buy it and it breaks and I got to go buy another one, it wasn't cheap. So for me, I want quality goods, and this is where, you know, I come back to, you know, American-made stuff. I'd put up against anything in the world, especially the cheap junk we're getting from China, which, you know, I got to be honest, is, you know, the quality is just not there. It's never going to be there. Because they use the cheapest possible yeah. things into it. So for me, it's just, it's like, how do we get here? Because I've said this before, I would love to every shelf have a Chinese option and an American option. I will pick the American made product every single time. The problem is those options don't exist, Scott.
Yeah, there's not as many of them. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the trade ambassador, as you mentioned, Catherine Tai is her name. She is great. She's fantastic. She's really, really bright. She listens to the concerns of working people. She gave a speech on Monday that outlined the administration's China trade policy for the first time. And this is something that a lot of people wait for. And Rick, to your specific point, she went back and she said, how did we get here? Here's how we got here. Basically, we gave the store away to China. You know, there's this theory that if we traded more, we'd get more democracy, we'd get more consumers in China buying our stuff. Guess what? That hadn't happened, and we get peace too.
Right, but let me ask you: did you actually believe that when they told you that?
I did not believe that. In fact, I still have a sign that I'll pull out the next time I'm on. That says "No blank check for China," way back from 2001. But that was the prevailing wisdom. That was the mainstream wisdom. A lot of national Democrats thought that at the time and were willing to give that theory a chance. Obviously, 20 years later, that's turned out to be bunk. It has not worked. And now we're stuck with a policy that is really dug in. And for people saying, well, we want change now. Look, it's going to be hard. There is no easy way to untangle this. If there were an easy way to untangle it, it would have been done a long time ago. Trump couldn't do it. He tried to use a sledgehammer. That didn't work. And then he tried to make a deal with China. That didn't work. Obama tried to use diplomacy. Bush, you know, hid his eyes from the problem. And Clinton just thought everything was great, you know, when he did this. And so we've had a history of more than 20 years where we haven't got this right. So it's going to take a change in course. It's going to take a strategy. And this is what Ambassador Tai talked about. I'm encouraged by it.
I'm encouraged too. Without question, yeah, I'm encouraged by it, because, you know, it's like anything. You first have to know you have a problem. And you and I have known there's been a problem for a long time. Our elected leaders, yeah, sadly, have not.
Yeah, right. And that has changed. And I think that, you know, one thing that we've said about Donald Trump, we both said this, that at least he understood there was a problem with trade policy. He may have not approached it from a perfect perspective, far from perfect, but he understood that there was a problem. And Biden also understands that and has been educable on this and has put people in positions to do things about it who also get it. And he listens to people like Senator Sherrod Brown, who's gotten this for a long time, or, you know, the United Steelworkers Union, who's gotten this for a long time, or the Teamsters, who have gotten this for a long time. And so there's a different set of people sitting around the table than there normally are when these policies are being written. Normally, it's these investment bankers and lobbyists for big companies that are writing the trade policy. And so this is a more worker-centered policy. I am sure that there will be points that we disagree with along the way, but what Catherine Tai said on Monday was so true. She outlined how we got here on steel and what the problems are with China and steel, and also with semiconductors, and also with solar panels, and did it in a very credible way. And, you know, Joe Biden talked about a lot of these same issues about trying to bring manufacturing back, having it made in America, making these smart investments. And so it's like a 1-2 punch. Yes, we need a good trade policy, but we also have to get our act together here at home. And that's what the Build Back Better plan and the infrastructure bill are all about.
Yeah. And what's the point of investing in the country if you're not producing the things that you need to invest in, and someone else is getting rich off of your investment? It just seems silly to me. But one of the things I did find interesting is this idea of pushing domestic content. I've been saying for years, domestic production for domestic consumption. We should be producing what we need here at home. We have our own supply chains, that we're self-sufficient. This idea that we're spread out all over the world, dependent on on countries that clearly do not like us. And I'm sure you noticed this week the Chinese sent 52 jet fighters over to Taiwan.
Oh, yeah.
That was a clear message that they are not happy with our discussions about trade.
Yeah. I mean, look, China makes 60% of the world's steel. China makes a majority of the world's lithium ion batteries. China makes a ton of semiconductors, too. We're behind on all of that, by the way. And so it does make sense to untangle this. And to your point, Rick, you got to do that through policy. And one of the ways is procurement and domestic content. That is, when the government is purchasing something or is giving money to states and localities to do infrastructure, those materials should be made in America. So when we're laying out broadband for communities, that fiber optic cable should be made in America. When we're building new bridges, that structural steel should be made in America. When we're erecting new wind towers and putting in new solar panel installations, those should also be made in America. And there's a couple of ways to do that. One is the direct government purchases, and Biden has an executive order on that, on what's called Buy American. That's well underway. The other is this highway funding, the infrastructure funding. There's 60 pages of new domestic content rules that would strengthen, modernize these requirements. If we get that bipartisan bill passed along with the Build Back Better plan. And then as part of Build Back Better and some of these other proposals, and I think this is what encourages me, is that the clean energy economy that we want to build, there will also be tax incentives to have that made in America as well.
Yeah.
So that there's more of an incentive to do the investment if the materials for the wind turbines, for the solar panels are made in America. And electric cars, here's a great example, that if you're a consumer buying an electric car, you're going to get an even better tax incentive if you're buying an electric car that A, is made in America, and B, it's made with union labor. And I think that's awesome. I think that's where policy should be headed. We just got to get all of this across the finish line now.
No, but what do you say to the person then, Scott? Because, you know, you and I have talked about this in subsidizing companies to build things there at home. What do you say to the person who says, well, that's what China's doing. They're subsidizing companies. They're giving them tax incentives, only they're doing it in a more direct way.
Yeah. So there's two big differences. Number one, China runs exclusive programs. They subsidize their national champions at the expense of everybody else. And in the case of steel, the Chinese government owns these companies. So this is not about the federal government owning any company. And this is also not about the federal government putting in subsidies so that we can be exporting this stuff to China and other countries. This is to take care of our own needs. China has what we call excess capacity, and they use these subsidies so that the Chinese producers can ship their excess steel abroad. They can ship their excess solar panels abroad. They can ship their batteries abroad. And so that's the major difference with all of this. We've had an industrial policy in the United States since the time of the Washington administration. It's taken different forms, but we've had it. And this idea that you can't do it is one of these ideological right-wing things where it's like, oh, multinational corporations know best, leave them alone. Well, that has bought us shortages, supply chain disruptions, and a total reliance on China for key materials and products. It was a dumb strategy from an economic perspective, from a national security perspective, from a public health perspective, and from a clean energy future perspective. And I'm glad the Biden administration recognized this. I'm glad a lot of Democrats in the Congress recognize this, and I'm glad even some Republicans in the Congress recognize this as well.
No, it's something we most certainly need. And look, we need to protect our steel industry. I mean, you guys just had a forum recently with a couple of congressmen, Congressman Lamb here from Pennsylvania and others, you know, talking about, hey, how do we save our steel? Because everything comes back to steel. And one of the things that came out of your presentation was the amount of steel that we make compared to what China makes. And it was some just incredible number that basically the amount of waste that China has is what we produce almost.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is I'm going to throw some stats out there, but the United States more or less makes about 100 million metric tons of steel a year. a little less than that. The global excess capacity, that is, there's more steel mills than there is demand in a normal year, is between 600 and 700 million metric tons a year. In China alone, that figure is 300 to 400 million metric tons. So China has zombie steel mills. These are steel mills that are making steel for absolutely no one. They have three of those for every one of our mills that is actually making steel that people, you know, need and buy, customers like the big three automotive companies or folks who make washing machines and other things in the United States. And so it is a crazy big problem. And that's why we have tariffs on imported steel, and not only steel from China, but also steel from Europe, because what happens in China has impacted the way that the Europeans run their steel business, the way other countries, other continents run their steel businesses as well. And this all has an impact on the United States, because we have the most open market in the world. And so that's why we have the tariffs. That's why we have to have these difficult conversations with our allies to say, look, we need a steel industry. Some of these companies have been on the brink for a very long time. You got to cut us a break here. We do not want to be dependent on China. And at the end of the day, that's not good for you either. So they're going to work out a solution here. But that's why we have steel tariffs on. It's not because of some, you know, just some Trump fantasy or what have you. This has been a problem for a long time. And this Biden administration recognizes it to be a problem as well.
No, it's something we absolutely have to address. And as we talk about this all the time, if you're going to have a functional country, if you're going to be a first world country, steel is like the most important thing, especially for national security purposes. So the fact that we're going to protect our steel industry, for me, is just, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I mean, it's in all the stuff that I mentioned, the electric vehicles, the solar panels, the wind turbines. Not only that, Rick, because of the way steel is made, there is carbon used in it, but American steelmakers are committed to decarbonize, and they're going to be far ahead of China. And so if you shut down an American steel mill and are depending on China for your steel, we're going to run backwards.
No, you're right. And then climate change gets worse and we're much worse off. But Scott, I appreciate the time. As always, incredible information. I'm glad you took some time for us. Look forward to having you get back again real soon.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. All the best to you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.